6:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Wes Moreno is the county administrator for Escambia County, and I have known Wes as we don't always tell this story, but it's worth knowing. I've known Wes since he was the roads director, and he taught me about the Crescent Lake Dam in the 2014 flood follow-up to that. That's kind of when I met Wes. Wes, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. It's great to be here this morning.
Good to have you. And like I told you at the Seville, grill-off event, state cook-off on Friday, I said, see, if you just stick with me, eventually you'll be the county administrator. And here you are. You know, you never know how far you can get.
That's right.
Governor Moreno, one day. You never know. Could happen. Got a lot of stuff on this meeting today.
I know.
A lot of stuff to get to. Let's start with what I view as the good news, like the best good news, is Escambia County Fire Rescue. We're buying more apparatus, an aerial, two pumpers, a mobile breathing trailer unit, about $3 million. And, you know, yes, please buy more, right?
Yes, this is, I met with Adam Reed and Eric Gilmore a couple weeks ago now, and, Adam's just doing great as fire chief. He's very methodical in his planning, and he has a plan. You know, he brought me a plan that would allow us to go ahead and make these purchases. He's also got a plan to extend the life of some of our current apparatus, take some of our more heavily used apparatus and move them to areas that are maybe not running as many calls, and then take those apparatus that have lesser miles and bring them further down and kind of rotate them around a little bit that way. He's just doing great. But, yeah, this is good news. More apparatus, you know, we in the budget, we approved 21 new firefighters as well. So,
oh, great.
Our fire's doing really well, and so I'm optimistic and excited about it.
Now, I will tell you, when I pair these side by side, that raises my eyebrow for just a second, but here we go. The Ashton Brosnahan building just unveiled yesterday, which is it's a multi-purpose. It's got some meeting space, locker rooms, mostly built, I think, around the soccer tournament now that we're getting that every year. Roughly the same total dollar value, you know, $3 million for the pumper trucks and the aerials and all that, $2.7 million for the building at Ashton Brosnahan, right?
Yeah, I think maybe what kind of goes unseen and we'll have some numbers coming out before too much longer is a lot of that work was done in-house. A lot of the site work was done by in-house forces. Even some of the construction work was done by in-house forces. And so there was just a lot of in-house from the road department to parks and recreation to the extension service and our arborists and Michael Rogers has done a great job of pulling these departments together, and departments have done a great job of working together to accomplish a lot of that work. So we're going to pull together. How much it would have cost us if we had to bid all that out?
And the primary justification, use, whatever for that, is going to be the SEC soccer tournament mostly, although it will have other benefits as well, right? And there's no doubt that the tourism money and the tax, bed tax, all the stuff that's coming from the SEC soccer tournament is a big deal. But that's the main primary justification use, right?
That's the main primary at this time. I do know that coming up sometime in 2024, the building will be available to be rented.
Oh, okay.
For different events and such for the public. And so that's something we're moving towards.
Okay, so it's sort of like a dual-purpose community center-ish? Small community center kind of concept.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. You guys are also today, or your board members, I should say, are going to look at approving sort of first steps to possibly buy the Motel 6 across from Bell Fenson Supply on US 29 south of airport to do what this would be like rental housing. Is that kind of the idea?
The idea, the concept is affordable rentals, and we have some folks that are in our shelters that actually have jobs and have income, but they don't have enough income to go out into the current market and rent, but yet they are working, and they've been participating in some of the wraparound supportive services to get back on their feet, and so the concept would be to take those folks and put them, those that qualify, into this facility. They would pay rent, and we would go out for an RFP to have somebody run the facility.
Okay.
And provide the wraparound services, and then transition them, ideally transition them out of that facility and just into the regular market. And then empty that, what that would do is create shelter space as well, clear up some of the space in the shelters to bring more people in, and kind of get a process going and a cycle going. And that's the concept. But what we're doing today is just asking for permission to do some due diligence, you know, get appraisals, assess the building, assess the zoning, and make sure it's all that's good and lined up. And then, of course, you know, you get through all that process, at the end of the day, it's what's the price. And so we'll see where we go as time moves on. But that's what we're doing today, is asking for permission to do that.
No, I think that's a really interesting, because, you know, we've talked, you know, many times about the kind of like the low barrier shelter and that end of the spectrum. But at the other end of the managing this challenge spectrum, you have the need for some kind of, like you say, kind of semi-transitional housing, you know, just barely below the open market, but something, you know, better than for the people, like you say, who have income and jobs and, you know, really could be out of a shelter if only there was something that they could afford. So that's interesting. I'm very curious to see how that shows up, but I love the creativity of at least looking at that possibility. We're talking to Wes Moreno, the Escambia County Administrator.
98 in Gulf Breeze and Navarre is looking good. Tiger Point's just starting to slow down a little bit. This traffic report is brought to you by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. For victims of drunk and drug driving, your grief is unique, but you are not alone. You always have a place at MAD.
Another dimension of the housing shortage problem that the county is trying to solve is we're looking at approving another, I think it's seven properties to be developed into houses. And this is not the first wave of houses. This is the second wave of houses you're looking to build. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Our first wave of houses is finishing up here in a couple of weeks, and we're excited about that. And we will partner with a nonprofit to get five families into those houses, and then we're going to build these seven, and then we'll have seven or eight more behind these. So as we move into 2024, my vision and our vision is we're going to drive to put, you know, 20 plus houses, you know, in the area on county owned lots that we own already, and work with our nonprofit and just work that into the spectrum as well.
So the county is basically working as the funding source to get these projects going, as the developer, you might say, but it's not intending to be in the real estate business, just intending to facilitate development to get houses out onto the market so we can start to alleviate the housing shortage, right? That's the idea?
That's the idea, yeah. No, we're not going to be in the real estate business. We're not going to sell the house. We're not going to pick the families who go in those houses. We're going to work with a qualified nonprofit, and we will give those houses to the nonprofit, and they will follow the processes of putting the families in the houses.
Very good. I know a lot of people who use the Pensacola Beach Fishing Pier have been concerned, and I know you have as well, about the poor state of the pier ever since Sally. We're finally in the process of getting that fixed, but that's going to mean that the pier is going to be closed for a while. What's going to be the status, and how long is it going to take?
So we just opened bids on the pier. The bids came in at $8.2 million. So we're taking a step back. We've met with our engineer, and we feel like we can modify the scope some. And there's some items that were more wish list items that really were not Hurricane Sally damage, apparently. So we're going to knock the scope back down, go back out, and we still feel like we can bring that pier back into operation by spring. And that's our goal. We know the cobia season starts, you know, running. The cobia, it's a big thing out there. So we're trying to meet that schedule, and engineering and Joy Parkman are driving hard to do that.
Okay, so we're looking for a lower scope so we can get a lower price to get it functional, and you still think we can get it back in by the pier. Is it? It's not closed down yet, right? Or is it? I mean,
no,
what's
no, it's not. It's not closed down yet.
But if you approve, it will be closed until the repairs are complete. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you know, obviously we'll keep track of that and keep me apprised, because I know, you know, all of our fishermen are like, oh, you know, that makes them very nervous.
Yeah,
because,
yeah. Well, it's a big thing.
Yeah,
you know,
they love that
like
pier.
There's never really a good time to do it, you know.
No, there's never a good time to shut down such a very popular public amenity. I did want to ask you, a listener had asked me, the repaving project, I guess, on Mobile Highway, pardon me, I don't know this area all that well and don't drive it, but between Pine Forest and Blue Angel, it's just kind of been languishing incomplete for quite some time, like 7 weeks or so. And he was curious if there was any timeline on the expected finishing of that project. I don't even know if that's an R project or an FDOT project.
It's an FDOT project.
Okay.
I don't know the exact timeline. I can find out and text it to you. But I don't know the exact timeline. I do know, I know I'm very familiar with it. I drive it every day.
Okay.
I do know they're doing some work at Klondike and Mobile Highway to get a traffic light installed there. And I don't know if they're waiting to get that work mostly completed and then come through and finish that portion of the roadway. And they got, you know, even in front of my, where I turn into my subdivision, one lane is resurfaced and one lane is just has the leveling course on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what their timeline is. I do know they're doing most of the work at night, or all of the work at night so far. And, but I'll have Chris Phillips contact FDOT and ask him what the timeline will be.
Okay, great. And I mean, Chris can just text me if you want, or, you know, if you want to let me know next week, you know, whatever you find out, if you find something out, that would be fantastic. And then the last thing, and I just thought this was an interesting one, this is an I didn't know kind of thing. I was reading one of the items having to do with approving the schedule for travel, and I guess, is it true that the Board of County Commissioners, the five commissioners, you and the attorney, have to have out-of-county travel approved by the board in advance? Is that right?
Well, the board has to have their travel approved, and they approved theirs, and they approved mine, and they approved Allison's. Every county employee has to have their travel approved for certain reasons. One, if you're going on a conference, there's financial things involved. There's
sure, right.
Per diems, there's hotel costs, and all of that has to follow a process of approval, or those reimbursements and those per diems won't be paid. The other thing is, if you have a county employee going traveling out of county and they don't have approval, and they have a mishap and they get an accident, it really changes our liability and our risk.
Okay.
And so that's, and then we follow that process. Even for employees just going to Mobile for a day, you know, we have some of our fleet guys that take vehicles over to Mobile to be worked on. Well, they have to have pre-approval to do that. Even though they're not staying overnight, and it's not really a conference, but they're traveling out of county in a county vehicle, and it needs to be, you know, the risk and liability needs to be lessened. So, yeah, everybody gets their travel approved, and at the higher levels, yes, the board approves, and you know, they go to Florida Association counties, National Association counties, they go to military flying day in Washington and certain things. But
oh, yeah, okay, I know where I was confused. So okay, this is I'm just dumb. This is for work related travel. This is not just for if they want to leave the county.
No, this is work related.
Okay, because
yeah.
When I first read it, I thought, man, you know, those are strict requirements that the county commissioners can't leave the county without having their travel approved. That makes so much more sense. I'm glad I asked.
It's work related travel.
Got
it. Things that the travel that the county is going to reimburse for.
That now all of a sudden that makes perfect sense. Well, thank you for explaining that to me. I learn things every day. Wes Moreno, he is the Escambia County Administrator, always joins us on a Thursday. The meeting is this morning, a morning meeting. I was late because there's not two meetings. Wes, thanks so much for the time this morning. Have a great meeting today. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. We'll see you, Andrew. You